Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and of course we're dependent upon you out there in the listening audience to help us so that we can continue bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And of course, as you know, we are heard on stations all up and down the Pacific Coast. And tomorrow morning we'll be heard in Northern California at 10:30 and in Southern California at noon, and in Portland at 1 o'clock, and in Omaha, Nebraska at 1 o'clock, and in Washington, D.C. at 1 o'clock, and stations all across the South. We sort of put together a little network of our own. We have to pay for time on most of the stations, and we do this, of course, because we want to get the truth out, and we don't want to be answerable either to the stations or to the to some sort of a sponsor, and we're answerable only to our listeners, and if they agree with us, they support us, and if they don't agree with us, they don't support us. But I hope that you out there in the listening audience believe in what we're doing, and of course you'll want to help us so that we can continue doing what we're doing, and being on shortwave, being on major station here in the Central Coast of California every afternoon from 4 to 5. The internet is a wonderful means of reaching people, and we've already had calls from Everett, Washington here this evening, and we know that you're listening out there all across America, because of course there's a record on the server who tells us that about 100 people are listening all the time, 120 people listening here in the evening out across America, and of course we're hoping very, very soon it's going to be many thousands of people listening on a regular basis across America. And you can help us to do that simply by telling other people about Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or of course encouraging them to listen to us on the internet at www.radioliberty.com. And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America, our values, our nation, our future are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Mr. Robert Stinnett. We've got Steve on the line. Steve, did you have a comment or a question for Mr. Stinnett?
No, but that what he is saying is correct, and that it's what is determined, like what we've read in our history books is not mentioned, that it's a, what it would be, they don't lie to us except by omission. The thing that where they pick out one little truth or one little fact or one little misstep, and they emphasize that and they harp on it, and to the point that the truth is lost. And they've done this, just to jump off this subject for a moment.
I just want to stay on this subject, though, if you don't mind.
Yes. Well, this relates to it in that type of a thing, in that, would it be the typical red herring if the government, and it depends on who is in the government, it doesn't really tie to any single party, it ties to those who seem to want to control and empower us.
Right. We're going to have to. We've got somebody on the other line, but thanks so very much for being with us and for giving us a call, Stephen. Do call again. Thank you so very much. And who do we have on the line here?
Dennis, Dr. Stan.
Hi, Dennis. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. This is another one of my favorite subjects.
Okay. A question or comment?
Two quick questions, and I'll hang up and turn the radio back on so I can hear them answer. Gordon Prang wrote an excellent book called The Dawn We Slept. I was wondering if you had any collaboration with him. And the second question is, does he see any parallels in today's political climate?
All right, fine. And of course, the question is, did you know the gentleman who wrote the book, At Dawn We Slept?
Yes, that's an excellent book, and that's really the one that got me started on this, my quest, because I had read in Gordon Prang's book, and Dennis can confirm this, that Prang revealed that, for the first time to me anyway, that the United States had, were monitoring Japanese communications prior to Pearl Harbor from Hawaii. And so that's what got, I was a journalist with the Oakland Tribune at the time, and suggested to our editor that we go to Hawaii and look at this station. and I was given the okay to do it, and that started me on this FOIA quest, because I had met some cryptographers there. They told me about it, but I wanted to get the proof, and that's what led eventually to my finding that smoking gun.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Dennis?
Yeah, does he see any parallels in today's world situation?
Do you see any parallels in today's world situation?
Well, yes. Well, Dennis and the person before him, Steve, Steve was talking about these provocations that we had at the Gulf of Tonkin. We had it in the USS Maine in Cuba. I'm told that President Lincoln used provocations to start the Civil War, or at least to get the people, the Confederacy, to fire at Fort Sumner. President Polk used provocations in the Mexican War along the Texas border. And you could probably trace it back to Julius Caesar, Dennis, if historians wanted to do it, I'm told.
Okay, fine. Thanks so very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Let's go. Who is this, Hino?
Hino.
Hino, how are you tonight?
Pretty good.
You're a first-time caller, aren't you?
Yes, first-time caller, and also a veteran of World War II.
Okay, did you have any question or comment?
I have a comment.
All right.
Or I might like to point a new direction to widen the perspective.
All right.
I was then a student of the American Institute of Banking in New York City. And this is 1941. And we had an English composition class, college level. And we were given an assignment to write something about stirring up patriotism in the country. I believe my instructor was Dr. Harvey Mudd. I am not sure. But the check of the records with the American Institute of Banking would certainly point out who the instructor was for certain. My paper is entitled Six Columnists. These were the apathetic people in the United States. My instructor went to Washington, and he showed my paper to President Roosevelt, which became very shortly thereafter topic of a fireside chat. You probably heard about those. And the term six columnist was used.
What is the six columnist?
Six columnists are the apathetic, non-patriotic people.
Okay.
The people that Russell was trying to stir up, principally because our country was, even though we were coming out of the Depression, the New Deal was fading. And they envisioned a great market in Europe, war profiteering, you know, at its worst.
At its worst, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. And so this was an artifice where we would become the supply depot for the world.
The supply depot for the world, and we'd end up with all the gold.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir, very much. Anything else you want to say? Okay, fine. Well, Mr. Stennett, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, I certainly appreciate the comments and questions and observations that they made. And I would ask them to regard me as the messenger of this information and for them to make up their own minds by reading these documents and come up with their own assessments.
Amen to that. Well, thank you, sir, very much. Our guest this evening has been Mr. Robert B. Stinnett. His book, The Day of Deceit, The Truth About FDR and Pearl Harbor. And if you can read this without provoking at least some emotion, why, you're beyond any hope. God bless you, sir, and thank you so very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I just wanted to take a few minutes and perhaps to give you a little different slant on what you've heard this evening. Now, of course, it was pointed out that reason that we had to have a Pearl Harbor was to mobilize the government behind, mobilize the people behind our government to get us into the war. And I'm going to ask Karen if she'll just ask for our, we're not on the internet, so if she'll just call over there and ask our engineer to come and to. And we'll get him on the line so we can get back on the internet so our people out can actually listen to our programs. But right now, yes, would you mind asking our... thank you. And let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the First World War. The First World War was fought to take us into the United Nations, as Lillian alluded to that. It was to be the war to end all wars. And we know, we actually have documentation, that they were planning on the First World War back in 1908. And those of you who haven't heard my interview with Mr. Norman Dodd, he will go into the background that the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace was working on that. We have actually a copy of the American Journal of History from 1908 talking about the coming war. We have information from Bertrand Russell's diary, autobiography, where they were planning on it before 1905. And this was, of course, the small members of the small secret society that Cecil Rhodes created. Why? Well, they created the Boer War. That was the first stepping stone towards consolidating the world, as Cecil Rhodes believed. And those of you who have never actually seen Cecil Rhodes' Confession of Faith, if you'd like a copy of it, we'll send you one free of charge. Just send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. I think it's important that you understand there was a secret society. The purpose of the secret society was to bring about a world government. And then, of course, we know that they precipitated the war. And if you get into the background of how they precipitated the war, they simply did it by having the Kaiser's brother told that if there was a war in Europe, it'd only be a little minor war because England wasn't going to come in. And the Kaiser honestly believed that because, you see, the King of England was the Kaiser's brother. Pardon me, the Kaiser's cousin. Just as exactly as the Tsar of Russia was the Kaiser's cousin. And it had been set up this way so there wouldn't be any wars. But the Kaiser didn't realize there were people in England who wanted a war. Why? Because they wanted such a horrible and bloody war that, of course, everybody would be willing to accept the rule of a world government. There were 21 million casualties in the First World War, and probably twice that many people who were injured and carried their pain of their wounds to their death. So probably dead and wounded about 60 million people, and believe me, the people of Europe were willing to accept a world government. They brought America into that war specifically and intentionally so we would then lead the world into the world government, but we didn't lose enough men, and the American people didn't want to give up our national sovereignty, and so the League of Nations failed. And, of course, then we had to get a Second World War. Now, to understand what happened, you need to read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And, of course, there's another book. It's called The Anglo-American Establishment, also written by Professor Quigley. And as you read these two books, you find out exactly what happened. The secret society during the First World War allied itself with France, with Germany as the enemy. Immediately after the First World War, they allied themselves with Germany, and France was the enemy. And, of course, then they began to build up Germany. And, of course, when Adolf Hitler came to power, they encouraged him at every turn. And if you read Tragedy and Hope, you'll find out that the Round Table group at this time, which was the front for the secret society, was called the Cliveden Set, and they were getting the German ambassador, von Ribbentrop, to come over to the meetings at Cliveden, which was the palatial estate of Waldorf Astor, of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, the Astors called, controlled the London Times. And, of course, they were doing everything they could to encourage Hitler to take Sudetenland, to take Austria, to take the Rhineland. You have read in your textbooks that this all had to do with Chamberlain's policy of appeasement. Didn't have anything to do with the policy of appeasement at all. They were actually encouraging Adolf Hitler to expand. And, of course, then, of course, Adolf Hitler thought that they were on his side. And, of course, there were strong occult overtones to Adolf Hitler's movement, but there were strong occult undertones to this group in England, because all of these people were into spiritualism, studying the occult, the Round Table group, and Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. In fact, when Rudolf Hess flew to England, he flew to get in touch with the members of the Round Table. And there are two books that will tell you that. One is called Prisoner Number 7 by Colonel Eugene Byrd, and the other is Motive for a Mission by the son of the Duke of Hamilton. Both of those books have been carefully suppressed because you're not supposed to realize that Adolf Hitler was working closely with this secret society in Great Britain. Well, of course, these people kept going over there and telling Adolf Hitler to go ahead and keep doing exactly what he was doing. And, of course, he took this Rhineland, he took Austria, he took the Sudetenland, then he took the southern part of Czechoslovakia. Then he demanded that the Polish government give him Danzig. And, of course, Danzig was a German city. And the British government said to the Poles, don't do it. Don't give it to him. Don't make any concessions to Adolf Hitler. He's a wicked and evil man. We'll stand behind you. Now, let me tell you something, that if the British government ever says they're going to stand behind you, you better start looking behind you, because they're going to betray you. They'd betrayed Belgium in the First World War, done the same thing to the Belgians, so they could justify creating the First World War, which devastated Belgium. And that's exactly what they did with the Poles. And they told the Poles not to make any concessions to Hitler, that they would stand behind them. Well, of course, then Hitler made his pact with Stalin, and Stalin attacked from the east, and Hitler attacked Poland from the west, and Britain declared war. She didn't declare war on the Russians, on Stalin, who'd invaded from the east. She just declared war on Germany. Why? Because they wanted a war. They wanted a long and terrible and bloody war. And you need to get the book, first of all, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, because it'll tell most of what I've told you. Then, of course, you need to get the book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And you'll find out that we had actually been building up Adolf Hitler's war-making potential. And General Motors, Ford Motor Company, General Electric, International Telephone and Telegraph, Chase Manhattan Bank, Exxon, the Morgan Banks, all the usual suspects, most of them corporations now, 60 years later, are building up communist China today. It's like deja vu all over again. The book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, will give you a tremendous insight into these people who built up the war-making potential of Adolf Hitler. And for those of you who have any questions at all, you send us a self-addressed envelope and you ask for a letter from Ambassador William P. Dodd. William P. Dodd was the American ambassador to Germany, and in 1936 he sends a letter to Colonel House, which I found in Colonel House's papers. And Ambassador Dodd says, why are these American corporations with subsidiaries in Germany building up the war-making potential of the Germans? I mean, we just got through a terrible, terrible war here, and nobody wants another war. And yet Germany is rearming, and American corporations are doing it. They can't get any money out of this country. There are exchange controls. There's no profit to be made. Is this fair to the stockholders back home that they're building these weapons and they're not going to make a profit on them? And, of course, Colonel House never answered the letter. But, of course, the answer was they weren't interested in profit. They were interested in a war. And once you understand that, once you understand that behind everything going on today are these dark and sinister spiritual forces that have always wanted to create a world government, because that's what energized Cecil Rhodes, and that's what energized Lord Milner, and that's what energized the men who joined Cecil Rhodes' secret society. And this is all covered in our video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, we give you the sources of reference. If you really want to see the extensive documentation, it's in a video entitled The Secrets of the Illuminati. And we will show you the documentation up on a screen. If you watch it there, you'll actually see many of the original documents. The men who joined the secret society came from something known as the Society for Psychical Research. What was the Society for Psychical Research? It was people fascinated by the occult. You found people like the William T. Stead, one of the original members of the Secret Society. He was into spiritualism. He was a theosophist. He was the disciple of Madame Blavatsky. And, of course, once you understand that, all of these things, this whole incredible story, begins to make some sense. And so, of course, they had the war going, and they had to get America into the war. There were a gentleman, his name was Tyler Kent, and he was the American code clerk in the American embassy there. And he was transmitting messages back and forth between Roosevelt and Churchill, and Roosevelt was promising Churchill would get into the war. Now, you have to understand they were both members of the Masons. In fact, Churchill was a Druid, deeply involved in the occult. In fact, we even have a letter he sent to H.G. Wells, and you'll find this in our special syllabus on the causes of wars and revolutions, where Winston Churchill says to Wells, of course, I can't discuss that outside of the secret circle. And you really can't understand either the invasion of Gallipoli during the First World War or the invasion of North Africa during the Second World War unless you understand the bloodlust of Winston Churchill and those he represented. I had the unique opportunity at one time to spend several weekends with General Albert Wedemeyer. And if you've ever studied the history of the Second World War or the history of China, you'll find that General Al Wedemeyer was certainly one of the heroes, one of the great American generals of the Second World War. And, of course, he was in charge of planning for the American War Department. And back in 1943, we were ready to attack Europe. And, of course, we wouldn't have gone in at Normandy. We would have attacked down to France. We wouldn't have lost anywhere near as many men. But, of course, in 1943, when we were prepared to attack the heartland of Europe, to attack the Germans directly and end the war, Winston Churchill would not hear of it. He wanted to attack North Africa. Now, why would you attack North Africa? I mean, what strategic significance was North Africa as far as ending the war? And it had no strategic significance. And of course, this was why Winston Churchill broke with Albert Wedemeyer and demanded that President Roosevelt send him off to become the assistant to Lord Mountbatten in India. And, of course, this was sort of like being sending somebody to Siberia for... I'm sure that Winston Churchill never knew that it would be a short step from there to go to China, where General Wedemeyer would end up commanding both the American and Chinese troops there. And, of course, that's what made his reputation. But Winston Churchill, of course, hated anybody who would not go along with him. He was a ruthless, cruel little man. And, of course, he actually wanted to do everything he could to get the Germans to bomb England because Roosevelt had promised him if the Germans bombed the civilian targets in England, America would certainly come into the war. And so Churchill ordered the bombing of open cities without any military potential in them in Germany, simply to get the response from the Germans. And de Gaulle, in his biography, tells about visiting Churchill, and Churchill is standing at the sky, shaking his fist at the and saying, "When are you going to come and stop dropping bombs on our cities? When are you going to come and start dropping bombs on our cities?" And de Gaulle says to him, "Are you so anxious to have them come and kill your civilians?" Because, of course, de Gaulle's country, France, lay in ruins at the time. But, of course, that's what it was all about. You provoke your enemy into attacking you. And, of course, they kept bombing open cities in Germany, and soon the Germans began to retaliate and bomb the open cities in England. And, of course, then we could say, look at those terrible Germans. I'm not saying that there's any redeeming qualities in Adolf Hitler or the Nazi movement. They were all founded in the occult. They were all evil and wicked people. But we had wicked people on our side. And in my opinion, the invasion of North Africa was the same as the invasion of Gallipoli. Now, if you read General Wedemeyer's book, General Wedemeyer Reports, he goes into Gallipoli. Most people have never heard of it. 150,000 British soldiers fell at Gallipoli. 150,000 Turks died or fell at Gallipoli. It was the most stupid invasion of the First World War. It was down in Asia Minor where the British attacked a beachhead where there was no way they could possibly advance and accomplish anything at all. It was simply a place where you'd lose an awful lot of men. And Winston Churchill, as High Lord of the Admiralty at that time, demanded that. And 150,000 British soldiers fell there, 150,000 Turks. And, of course, after the war, why the British wanted nothing to do with Winston Churchill. But you see, if you understand that the purpose of the First World War was to kill as many as you could and have as much blood and gore and horror as you could, because that's how you're going to get people to be willing to give up their national sovereignty and freedom and move into this one world government, then it all makes sense. And that's what, in my opinion, what North Africa was about. I remember asking Al Wedemeyer, General Wedemeyer, why did Winston Churchill want to go into North Africa when it was of no military significance? And he never understood why. But I think I understand why, because Winston Churchill was a wicked and evil man, and part of this whole group of people working behind the scenes moving us towards the one world government. And so when you understand that's what it was about, now, of course, the American people didn't want to get into the war. How did you get them into the war? Well, of course, we needed some atrocity. And what could be more atrocious than a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor? Most Americans didn't realize we had already provoked the Japanese into it. We had already declared war on the Japanese by putting an embargo on their access to raw materials and oil. And, of course, they, of course, not understanding the implications of America's foreign policy, were horrified when they found that 2,800 American boys died at Pearl Harbor. And as Mr. Stinnett says in his book, one of the military officers in charge said, well, that was a small price to get us into the war. The war was never fought to defeat the Germans. We financed the Germans all through the war. There's a wonderful book called Trading with the Enemy. We traded with the enemy all during the world, or during the Second World War. We financed him. We built up his military. And then we helped him at every turn. And the great, great tragedy, all you need to do is look at the bombing patterns. We were bombing the civilians, but we weren't bombing any of the war plants. If they were American plants, we didn't bomb the Ford plant, the General Motors plant, the AT&T plant, even IG Farben, because it had strong ties to America. I'll never forget, I was in Germany, I was in Frankfurt at the end of the Second World War. The IG Farben building, and they were the ones producing the munitions, that was left untouched. Well, it's a terrible, terrible tragedy when you understand what we're really up against. We're up against evil, evil, evil men who have two objectives, a one-world government and a one-world religion. And until we can let the American people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, we're going to continue losing. But, of course, we have a plan, and we have some things we want to do. What are we going to do about the Supreme Court? We're going to launch a program to impeach the Supreme Court justices. What are we going to do to educate the people? Well, you're going to have to help us. You're going to have to get the information on our tape sets and copy them and start getting people to meetings. Get them educated. Get them understanding. Because if they do not understand that all of the wars of the century have been phony, then we'll be having another war. And perhaps it'll be their son or their grandson or their husband who are going to die. It's time that the American people understood history so we do not have to repeat it. And so until Monday at the same time, Dr. Stan, I hope you've enjoyed this program. Good night, and may the Lord be with you.
FM 89.9 in Santa Cruz. 24 hours of easy listening and beautiful music, featuring comprehensive commentary on the news and issues of real importance. We're covering the Central California coast with the best for your listening pleasure. Commercial-free and non-profit, this is KFER 89.9.